spirit catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are moving on with the Early Morning Scoop. We are greeting you from your number one favorite talk radio station. What are you doing? Where are you? And are you looking ahead? What is your role, particularly in terms of things that you want to change in terms of the development of the country? Not only development as a concept that we speak about, but things that you really change, particularly from a human perspective, infrastructure development policies, and also improving, you know, the greater good of Namibians. So, you know, we are greeting you, everyone, and also we are always thanking you, especially for choosing Eagle FM Namibia, and also for continue listening and also contributing to the conversation that matters, conversation that, you know, speaking about what need to be done, policies, not only about analyzing of policies, but also emphasize on how far in terms of policy implementation, and also how many people have been impacted by that of which has been presented. So today we're gonna be speaking about mining. Particularly looking at what is Namibia participation in the mining sector, and also in reference to G20. You know, declaration on critical minerals, or G20 declaration, at the point of G20 declaration for 2025. Also be able to look at the sector of critical minerals. What are the Africans saying? What are the developing countries saying about the use of critical minerals? What is the newly developed framework that is being proposed? And also looking at the highlights of the mining in Damba in South Africa. What were some of the key highlights? What is the position not only of South Africa, but Africa too, and what Namibia should also learn from that aspect? Before we go to what is happening in the continent of Africa, let us look at a short commercial break. Then from there, we go right into it. Stay tuned, because we are here until the hour of 8 in the morning.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at voermanbrock.com. We care.
Yeah, apart from intensification of trade between Africa and China, and when we are speaking about Africa and China, we are saying except Eswatini, apart from the communique which was given by Chairman Xi Jinping, that is, the head of Chinese Communist Party, and also the president of, China, indicated that Africa will export into the Chinese market from May, the 1st of May, export in the Chinese market without any charges in terms of tariffs. And this is expected to boost trade in Africa. But it's also coming at a moment where United States of America is also saying, Africa, you are still our good friend. We are giving you one more year to trade within that African continental. Africa Growth and Opportunity Act that is gone. But it's also at the same time that EU is saying, Africa, you are a good friend, and will continue to expand infrastructure, particularly infrastructure that are related to trade, and also advancing your country. But the question that we should ask is a question of saying, what is Africa saying about itself? What are we saying about ourselves? What, are we saying about our resources? And have we done justice for our people? If we have done justice for our people, do we have evidence that show that we have done justice? Are we still discussing there are issues of practical implementation of, what we said we were going to do? or if we have to look at analysis of, you know, what we have proposed and what we have done, at what percentage are we going to rate ourselves, take any policy, take any program, put it on the scale, and also, you don't necessarily need to take, you know, a plan for the country. You can even look at SADC to say, what was SADC planning to achieve? What was SADC planning to achieve? What did SADC achieve in terms of economy, in terms of, you know, environment, in terms of health, in terms of leadership and governance? And did SADC really account for what it has been doing, or did we account? Or let me say the question that the right question to be asked is that did leaders hold themselves accountable? Particularly, did they advise each other when they are moving out of, you know, when they are moving out of lines? Did they advise each other when they are entering dangerous trade deals, or it's just a matter of you go there and I am here? But yeah, looking into that, let us look at what have happened. It was stated that looking at Kenya. Kenya airport strike leaves thousands of passengers stranded. And it was stated that Kenya airport strike was indicated that a strike delayed flight at Kenyan main airport on Monday as workers, you know, demanded better pay, improvement working condition. Kenya Airway, the East African country main airline, issued a travel advisory urging customers to check their flight status before heading to Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in Nairobi. The statement also said that air traffic control operation delays were affected by departures and arrivals, and flight schedules would have to be adjusted. You know, that is what happened. You know, it's not only our disappeared Namibian airline, which had problems, but also Kenya Airway, so have problems. And those who have been traveling from or to Kenya, particularly those on a business trip, also on tourism, you know, there was delay, particularly yesterday during the strike, especially looking at that country in, you know, East Africa. And the issue of airlines, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to manage. It's a very difficult business because, you know, aviation business, especially in Africa, we must admit that you know, it's very difficult to run, but we'll be able also to see those who are managing and also those who are cruising. Especially look at Zambia there. Also look at Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a big boy now, especially when it's coming to aviation. They don't only have the best aviation school in the continent, but they also have the biggest airport, the biggest airline, and those who travel continentally. We'll be able to understand that Ethiopia Airway is king, but it's also maybe a lesson to learn, so to see what is that need to be done, so that we can also learn from the best practice, particularly in terms of aviation. Looking at the fact that the other time we see Minister Nekundi indicating that there is no way Namibia will be without an airline, and there were already committees in place to make sure that we revive Namibia Airline, but it will have a different name of Namibia Air, because that name, Namibia Airline, you know, when you are liquidated, you know, you have to come back with a different name, unless you get baptized, come back with a different name. And we see that not only the condition of Kenya Airway. Because if you don't have a good working condition at the national airline, then it's not only affecting those who are working there, but it's affecting, you know, it's affecting everybody who is using that service. But it's an aspect that need to be looked at, and also this aspect that you know, need to be analyzed. Now looking at Sudan, you know, we really do not know Even if you know, you may not understand. Even if you understand, you may not want to look at it properly and also see that when it's coming to Sudan, either it's Sudan or South Sudan, there is always a news, and it's not always a positive news, particularly coming from that side of Africa. It was stated that a drone strike on a crowded market in central Sudan has killed 28 people with a dozen more. And a human rights group said on Monday, without specific who was responsible for an attack. And several drones struck on Sunday the Ai Safia area market outside the northern Kordofan town of Sodari. That is according to emergency lawyers, a group monitoring atrocities in Sudan. Nearly 3-year war between army and rival paramilitary. Understand that whether it's Sudan, whether it's Sudan, when it comes to conflict, I do not want to say they are number one, because there's nothing really to celebrate about conflict in Africa. The question is that who is responsible? And the question is also that maybe need to be asked to say, how come we speak about terrorism, but these terrorists have so advanced weapons to that extent, a drone of a capacity and the capability of killing 28 people and wounding a dozen of people at an open market? It's not just a bomb. It's not a head grenade. It's not a rocket. It's a drone. And understand that, you know, sometimes we really need to be to relook at how do we control the movement, and also who is supplying these things to, you know, to African people, especially highly advanced technology. Was it really used by Africans? If it was used by African, at what cost? How much was paid? And how come a weapon of such nature can also go through a black market? Or was it used by an official government? It's really something which is worrying, because it's not only Sudan, it's not only South Sudan, but also many other country. Also speak about Nigeria. So when you are speaking about Nigeria, peace and security, it's a news of the past. It comes to peace and security. It's a news of the past, and that is really something that need to be looked at, especially looking at Sudan. Now, coming to South Africa, you know, when it comes to foot and mouth disease, apart from South Africa coming up with their own vaccine, apart from targeting 20 million cattle, apart from intensifying vaccination, it was stated that Zambia has slammed its border. Zambia have shut down its border to all South African livestock and related product in an urgent biosecurity move as a devastating foot and mouth disease outbreak spread across South Africa, prompting Pretoria to declare a national disaster. To say when it comes to foot and mouth disease, it's now declared a national disaster in South Africa. And looking at that context, Zambia Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock announced the suspension with immediate effect, revoking, all previously issued import permit. Into this context, the ministry has suspended all livestock import permit from South Africa following the outbreak of foot and mouth disease in that country. And the ban extend beyond live animals, include livestock feed, trophies, skins, hides, cloven hoofed animal products such as dairy, unless strictly mitigation measures are implemented. And transit of live animals from South Africa through Zambia has been halted. Now the question is that in the context of Namibia, have we made any move? Are we able to afford? Have we made any move? It's not only immigration, but also the Ministry of Agriculture regarding foot and mouth diseases. Or we are still importing products. We are still importing products. And the question is always to say, can you survive without South Africa? Can you survive without South Africa? Surprising you. And what lesson are you learning? And the question of permanent interest does not only mean when a person is no more your friend, but also means when the person is also in trouble, or means when the country is also in trouble, especially looking at South Africa now, with its foot and mouth disease. To say what measures Namibia has implemented, or we are still waiting. Zambia has made the move to say it's not going to happen. And so indicated that South Africa declared that national disaster, foot and mouth disease, and there is a target and the roll out vaccination of millions of cows, cattle, and to contain the spread, South Africa plan to vaccinate 14 million cattle over 12 months using 28 million doses. And the beauty of South Africa, regardless of its problems, it is stated that Africa has also manufactured or have came up with its own vaccine, and we are yet to see how they are going to roll it out. And the question is always that when South Africa is coughing, is Namibia sneezing? What is the measures in place, particularly from the land of the brave, regarding foot and mouth disease coming from South Africa? Because our trade is not only integral to each other, but interlinked, and we are not only sharing a common history, but we have a trade that has been in existence for a very long time, and we are sharing not a lot of things, not only water. We speak about trade, we speak about over 40% of our trade, and also when it comes to animals products, what have we done? And we are here to see what the ministry and also the government has done to respond to what's happening in South Africa. Let us look at a short commercial break and come back.
Choose driving sober over driving intoxicated. Choose to obey speed limits over speeding. Choose to use pedestrian crossings over crossing just anyway. And choose to replace worn-out tires over pinching pennies. Choose to do the right thing on our roads and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
At ShopRite, you get nothing but the best at prices you can trust. That means having a wide range of exclusive quality brands to choose from. Find everything you need when you shop our trusted range and get 2 kg Right Brand White Sugar, $39.99, and 500 grams Right Brand 40% Fat Bread Spread for $9.99 each. Your everyday essentials from top quality brands all in one place. Offers valid until 22 February 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And before you look at Namibia and look at the conversation for today, because today I've been engaged in a conversation with Dwight Links, especially when we're speaking about Namibia and the mining sector, and look into that aspect. Before then, let's look at Madagascar. You know, when you look at Southern Africa, when you look at Southern Africa, you know, DRC, Madagascar, and Mozambique, news, and, you know, some can be political, some is also climate. And it's really now the time to understand that when it comes to climate, this impact that we less contribute, especially Africans, you know, it's really affecting us. And they stated that Madagascar cyclone death toll rose to 59. It's you know, natural disaster continue to cause, you know, death in Madagascar. The death toll from Cyclone Gezani as into Madagascar, which are, you know, in the east coast of Madagascar, that have started on February, has, you know, killed 59 people, with 15 people still missing, and more than 16,000 displaced, the country's disaster agency announced. But that is very clear. What is very clear is that, you know, when it's coming to natural disaster, Southern Africa is also becoming, you know, a dangerous zone, especially when it's coming to natural disaster. Because it's not only about the drought which impacted Namibia in 2024, but we understand that from December to January there, we have seen how devastating was flooding in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, and also in Mozambique. But Madagascar is also suffering of cyclone. And, you know, 16,000 people are displaced in that country. And, you know, we're also asking yourself to say, you know, it's not only political conflicts that happen in Madagascar, also natural disasters. And the question is, what is SADC's response? And what happened to SADC early warning signs and also SADC institution, particularly dealing with disaster, either it's warning, either it's a response, and also the investment? Because recently we are not hearing much about the activities of SADC. And maybe is it because the chairperson of SADC is still nowhere to be seen, or is still in France, particularly when Mr. Audrey Andre Rogerine, who was the president of Madagascar, has you know, was airlifted last year, particularly when the Generation Z indicated to say he must leave the office, even to the point when he's saying, I'm swearing to God that give me one more year so I fix things. But in that context, the question that you are asking is to say, how is the response, particularly when it's coming to climate? And it's really becoming a disaster in Southern Africa and also in other part of the African continent. And coming to Namibia, you know, when it's coming to the financial sector, you know, there are positive things, because, you know, the good thing about Namibia, we do not only look at what we are going through, we also look at what we have managed to go through, especially looking at the Namibia financial sector. You know, looking at Namibia Financial Intelligence Center, the recent report which was released, especially through Bank of Namibia, has indicated that when it comes to, it's coming to Namibia financial sector, Namibia is showing some, or has shown improvement and has managed to deal with its problems, particularly addressing the financial or deficit or 13 strategic deficiencies that were given or were indicated by Financial Action Task Force. And you must be able to remember that on February 2024, Namibia was gray-listed by Financial Action Task Force, especially due to its deficiency, its weakness in the system, its inability to deal with money laundering, illicit financial flow, and also terrorism financing. And it was given 13 strategic deficiencies that it has to address, and also strengthening of its institutions. And, you know, looking at that aspect, Namibia have managed, the report from the director of Financial Intelligence Center of Namibia, especially through Bank of Namibia, has indicated that the recent meeting in Mexico, the recent Financial Action Task Force plenary meeting held from 9 to 13 February indicated that Namibia has managed to address all its 13 strategic deficiencies in its anti-money laundering, counter-terrorism financing, and also illicit financial flow. This is something that, you know, need to be thanked, not only Financial Intelligence Center, maybe Bank of Namibia too, the financial sector, and also law enforcement agencies, because and the prosecution too, because this is not only this was not only the challenge which was directed to Financial Intelligence Center, although they are at the center of coordinating and strengthening of the system, particularly when it's coming to, you know, illicit financial flow and terrorism financing. And the challenge and the fear has always been to say, when Namibia has been grey-listed, it has impacted, actually, the confidence of investors. Although there have been presentations to say, no, it's just grey-listing, it's things that we can handle. But one thing which must be very clear is that when you are grey-listed, when people are investing in you, they are cautious because they understand that they can lose money anytime. And they also understand that your financial system is weak. But it's also worth noting that Namibia was given until May, and just before May, Namibia was able to manage to address all those deficiencies in its financial system. And one of the recommendations is ability to accelerate the prosecution and also the prosecution related to money laundering. Capacitating your institution, particularly having a capable investigator that are dealing with illicit financial flow, anti-money laundering, and also terrorism financing. Not only having investigator, but also having magistrate and judges who understand the critical issues of money laundering, understanding tax evasion, and there may be institution that you've been at the center of that. You have NAMRA. You have Financial Intelligence Center, your Bank of Namibia. You also have other commercial banks and businesses too. To say Namibians, we should also thank ourselves because Namibia will also be able to cooperate, especially that aspect of, you know, beneficial ownership that has been giving businesses, you know, tough time. And I remember in 2023 there, especially when Financial Intelligence Center said all this NGO that are funded from outside must be able to give their financial records and must also be very clear, must be transparent about their finance, particularly if you get money from outside, because that will help in assisting in dealing with, the issue of grey-listing. And I have seen yesterday, EU has also thanked Namibia. EU Commission has also thanked Namibia, particularly addressing that issue. And it's good for investment, because if you are removed from grey-listing, because there is no doubt that Namibia will be removed from grey-listing, there is no doubt, because the results are there. Just a matter of time, and matter of also continue complying. And what lesson also have you learned to say, Namibia, are we only able to work when, Namibia, are we only going to work when we are under pressure? Are we only going to work when we are cornered? Or is it that we should continue to maintain? Because it's one thing to be removed from grey-listing, and it's also one thing to be consistent. Because it's not the first time we are finding ourselves in the dangerous zone. But how are we going to deal with that aspect moving forward? And is EU also removing us too from high risk jurisdiction? Because remember, last year, EU has also put at this high risk jurisdiction in that category. And when you are put into that aspect, it also, there was a time Financial Intelligence Center saying, you know, even if we made progress, we were shocked why they put us at, high jurisdiction zone. But this will also be good for investment, either it's domestic investment or international investment, but also good for the country. Because one must also be very clear to say, if you are speaking about grey listing, if your financial system is very weak, ask yourself this question. Why it has to take years to finalize the trials? Why it has to take an international investigation agency within Al Jazeera to expose things such as money laundering, things related to fish rot? And why until now, even the student of law who follow, even the student of law who follow the fish rot case, sometimes you also lose interest because there is no direction, because there is up and down, there is no clear understanding, and there is actually, you may say, there is no visible progress. And one may also ask to say, justice denied is justice delayed. We may think that they had to creep them and the Shangara, the one who, you know, corrupted the whole system. But at some point, an accused end up also becoming a victim due to the system, inability of the system to prove itself that it can be able to prosecute money laundering. It can be able to finalize the cases. It can also be able to have experts who can present complicated cases and defend the Namibia financial system. Because some of this money that were eaten through the laws, loopholes, legal businesses established, and forced international agreements, and you see government objectives and all these things. But you need somebody who is well trained to follow and understand that system. So let's look at top score.
Eshi wataloka umekwe mbelo taveli pulanga helipi ngengo vamo no wewe yako fikola no 10th gen iPad ipopo ya dimo shipaketi. Top score instant. Oyaita pwefinda no talishambula lokushuna kofikola mondo maeveja vaino milongo mbali na hamano. Opo uningo mfindani wakamweko mo iPad aveli vahetatu ovo tavaka findanwa ilo mano kavaucha ko ipumbi wa fikola yungushu ya dola eo vilimwe dana mibia oshipu nengono lando kashako oko KG imwe eleke KG dilimbali ko top score instant. Oku jamo fitola keshe moshilongo ashishe ndeto SMS oshicha instant. Totumu kombali oneveli vatatu nombali efi afanueli otali kulumo milongo natuna alimwe amarija mondoma eveja vaino milongo mpali na hamano e mangono malandula fano odo dino kulandurwa. Top score, a proud product of Namibi Mills.
That is what's happening, and it's a good move, and maybe it's also a question of how the future is looking like, especially with the financial sector. Now, there's something that we usually make jokes about, especially, you know, when you look at the report of Bank of Namibia, and I think when you look at, and it's actually a good thing, even no matter how crisis the situation is, there's already this saying to say, Namibia financial system is very strong, is sound, and can withstand the external pressure, and so far, the financial sector of Namibia is very strong. But maybe with, because even during that time of grey listing, that has been the discussion. I think maybe now it will also be, the statement will also sound clearly, especially when they will be speaking to say, no, Namibia financial system is very strong, it's sound, and it can withstand, external pressure. But, one must also be able to understand that, I think with the silent of, I think Namibians are also becoming away with the silent of, because this thing of cyber attack, I think there is little progress, although it's still a challenge. Maybe it's also one of the things that efforts must be put there, particularly within the financial sector, because people are still scammed, although not at a grand scale anymore. People are starting to understand when you call a person and you start speaking about money and finance. They are also starting to be skeptical. Even the adults now, the elders understand. They don't discuss finance through the phone anymore. Because if you start asking a person details, I think that is also the aspect that need to be dealt with. And having strong institution does not only make you a good country with at an international at an international level, but also be able to allow you to deal with your internal domestic affairs. And maybe the question that we need to ask ourselves is to say, now that we are removed from grey listing, or we are going to be removed from grey listing, now that we have addressed our issues, we have done that because there has been pressure to say, Namibia, put your house in order. But the question is always this, to say, are we only answering to the international pressure? If there is pressure in the country to say, people need opportunities, if there is pressure in the country to say, people need shelter, people need security, the young people need security, the young people need, to exercise, their rights to work, to participate in the economy. But they still commit in discussions. But when Financial Action Task Force saying, Namibia, we are graced, come May 2026, they are giving you a new May 2026, then you see BIPA is here, you see NAMRA is here, you see FIC is here. The banks are saying this, and fast, then things are in order. Then the question is that, is Namibia removal from grey listing going to be felt, or it was just done because of that, going to be felt by an ordinary person? Because the thing was, having a strong financial system, having good investment, having trusted investors domestically and internationally, then you'll be able to improve your lives. Because the thing is that when you, because the perspective is that when you have good laws, when you have good institutions, then the people within that country will be able to benefit from that good institution. Or we are just ticking the box. Have we ever now gone down and saying, okay, this is now the system, now we are not able to lose money. The money that we are losing now through that weak financial system, what can we do with that finance? Can we now redirect them somewhere? But yeah, that is the conversation. That is the conversation. However, you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401 or 83-288-401, so that you can be able to air your view, ask your question, give your contribution, and expand the constructive criticism, because we are always indicating to say, where there is constructive criticism, where there is alternative, when you enter a debate that has an alternative, then that is a good debate. Because don't just debate to win, because if you are still in 2026 and you are debating to win a debate, you are very far, you are still wrong, and you have a wrong way to go. Debate so that you can learn. Debate so that you can get a different perspective. Good morning. Good morning.
David.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I just realized that most of the points that you discuss from the time when you met, Tate Matiasha,
mm-hmm.
Many of those critical issues,
yeah,
they just go unpacked.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they are very, very critical to our economic and social development.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially the disaster that you're talking about,
yeah,
the armed conflict that you're talking about, and many, many, many other things. The only thing that we tackle is the ones that come after 7. And I realize that we might be missing a lot.
Come again?
So the only issue that we tackle,
mm-hmm,
is usually from 7, to 8. And that time might not be sufficient enough to discuss critical issues that really affect Africa also, like the disaster that you mentioned,
mm,
and all other things that you have mentioned from 6.
Mm-hmm.
So they go unpacked. because we might not understand some of those issues, the complexity, like the war, the armed conflict that you are talking about, or the disaster issues and things like that. So that's where I wanted to just draw my attention on, so that at least how serious impact are those issues affecting our life, especially when it comes to armed conflict. You mention about Sudan, you mention about all these other things. I just feel that, yes, there are also, there might be some chances for us to really unpack some of those things. And these are the ones that are actually growing development. If the laws are there, like maybe you say cyber crime, we are moving there, but things are still happening. And this is actually, this is our own baby.
But it's like Namibia, we're cooperating and we did well, actually. Especially looking at the issue of grey listing, and I think we are complying and we respond fast than I expected. I'm also shocked that if we can do that because of international pressure, why can't we do that with other things? We wait for somebody to point the finger on us.
Yeah, no, we should just do. Once there's an indication that here you are not doing good, here you are not doing good, and we respond, we should be responding to many critical issues without being pressured.
Yeah.
Because the needs themselves, the concern, the interests of the people should be the ones that should drive us to respond to and address those kind of issues.
Yeah.
If we are not forthcoming to address those critical issues and we don't respond immediately, so that is our own making. So that's why I'm saying even disaster, we are even blessed and God is on our side. Not that it's not on the side of Mozambique and South Africa, where those the weather patterns become so much harsh to us. So we should be responding, and we don't do that. And I'm happy that the disaster risk and all these other things, whether it comes with a drought or floods and all these other things, we should be ready to respond.
Yeah, and there is a thing of disaster risk prevention, which is very important than managing a disaster, because what is necessary is to prevent the disaster, or if you cannot prevent the disaster, is to be at least ready. What can you do? Because you already know that, for example, in Namibia, our challenge is drought. Our challenge is we are in a dry area. What are we doing before it become dry? That is the question. Instead of saying no, now we are taking tanks of water here, or when the situation become worse, or what are we doing in terms of, do we have a strategy even dealing with the farming at, I want to indicate to say northern part of Namibia, because most of us, we only still depend on the rain. But have you ever thought of a situation where it's not going to be rain for 2 to 3 years?
So can't we not adapt?
No, we really need to change the strategy, even the strategy of farming. We are still using the old model. And talking to the grandmothers, they are still not agreeing to say, you know there is a, I don't know how they call it in agriculture, where when you are turning
the traditional method, yeah, the traditional way of cultivating.
Yeah, when you are ploughing, you can't face always the same direction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
there are still people who are saying no. This is my field. Come climate change or not, this is where I planned Omahangu. You cannot change anything. And it's becoming difficult too, because things have changed too.
You know what I do? What I'm thinking, integrate those traditional or traditional method with the modernized kind of mechanism of agriculture, and then you put these things, you know, climate change. I think climate change has been now, it's now singing in our hearts, in our minds.
Mm.
It does not mean that when you come now with a climate agriculture, climate smart agriculture method, just producing food.
Mm.
It does not mean that you should not incorporate the traditional way of doing things. For example, if you are plowing, you are using the tractor, and you forget about the donkey.
Yeah.
When the rain pattern is now taking its own tune, what do we do? So we plow, and then we wait for, with a tractor, then we wait for the rain to come again. Why can't you use, also use donkey, and go there, the adipulula, so that you move with the pattern of the rain. So that this one grow, and then you relax a bit, and this, the other one now, the rain comes, relax a bit. And then you start again. What prevents you there?
Even beyond that, even putting something like a, I don't know, it's not a green screen, but a greenhouse to say, how do these things adapt? Because if I have to go to my, if I go to my village now, when I was a young kid, if I travel around the village, I know this house, they only plant mahangu here. Here is where there is a fukwa. Here is where there is what. But they did not even change. But the weather have been changing. Things have been changing. A lot of things have changed. But just because of that. Just hold on.
At ShopRite, you get nothing but the best at prices you can trust. That means having a wide range of exclusive quality brands to choose from. Find everything you need when you shop our trusted range and get 750 mils Right Brand Sunflower Seed Oil, $29.99, and 3 kg Right Brand Macaroni for $59.99. Your everyday essentials from top quality brands all in one place. Offers valid until 22 February 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Yeah, we are moving forward with EMS. Yes, let's continue.
It is up to us to introduce and incorporate the methods that are not known by our traditional mothers and fathers. So if we say, fine, this is no longer, yesterday I was listening before you came in, that yes, you can plow. What to fora mbuya tuningimbuya no fora mte pula nendongi nengo nembaku mbaku nengongi ni ngayo ni andi daira mbaku mbaku kaya andi rongitano. So you, what you do, you now convince and create awareness to the people who think that yes, gweto kutoku mefukwa ukiye uno ebeshinda ya kuchonya karata na uka nandale ngeme kwa atulimi ngaye we always change. Gewo pulanga ndo masikwenye ile duradiri bayo ukifaku, ninaleto duruku ukifaku. Depending on the way the system is leading you. Because you are building the system. Because if you are saying, no, the old people are saying this, most of the old people are no longer getting into the field.
Mm-hmm.
You get there, but you are the one who is modernizing and this cultivation mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't you then say,
okay, I get you. Maybe just I want your 2 points on the mining sector. Why do you think the mining sector, regardless of being one of the sectors that Namibia depends so much, still employ just 2% of Namibians?
So can you not convince them and direct them to diversify their activities?
Diversify how?
So now what they do, if they were used to sponsor, for example, Rabi and whatever and things like that, they can also find 2% or 5% to say yes. Now we have seen that we are contributing maybe more or less, 2%. I don't know whether it means less, like you were saying. you do not really understand whether 2% is an increase to GDP, it's an increase to reduction of social and economic pressure for the community.
It's 2% of Namibians, because you know, when we were comparing to say, if the informal sector employ 58.7, almost 60%. Then the mining employ 2%. Then you also look at who contribute more to the GDP. You also realize to say, in terms of GDP, the informal economy is contributing almost 30%, that's 26.7 there. Then this mining sector, regardless of speaking about uranium, speak about diamond, forget about that. Then you are asking yourself a question to say, who is really benefiting from this? Are these things not having value? And interestingly, if you look at import and export trade balance, you realize to say almost the top three are the mining sector. Then you ask yourself a question to say, when we are selling, are we even making a profit out of this? Or what is really going on? Are the numbers not numbering?
If it's benefiting only 2% of the Namibians, we know obviously that yes, it's not benefiting the majority of the Namibians. What you do, you now channel that energy, that resources, all those efforts that you are talking about, to other activities that might not have been known by the mining sector. Hence, we talk about diversification of economic activity. I'm always quoting, plus-phrasing the statement from the Kanjokan Panyoka. And everywhere you go, if you know that this particular area, sector like mining, is not generating more to your desires, what you do, you now tell them the brewery, and the mining sector, and say, fine, where is it, which area of economic activity is more potential to absorb and create wealth to us, to create more employment? It is in agricultural, it's in informal agricultural sector, or is it in housing that is more pressing? Which area is more potential? If you know that the mining is not getting more, 2% goes to this one and so on, why can't you now redesign some kind of system and say, yes, this is where we think the benefits are coming more? Mimenetumbo has discovered that, yes, if this amendment is done in terms of the law, so that means our people are going to benefit more rather than having these people to illegally mine and ship out raw material. Is that not up to us to assist the vision of the leadership?
Thank you.
And manage that.
Thank you.
Welcome. So I'm going to come back again when you now get in touch with your people.
No worries. You're always welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, that is a conversation. And also to us to say, looking into the future, if we have interest in minding, in buying, for example, shares in the beers, if we're interested in mining shares in the beers, how are we going to operate in that sector? And, are we able to make profit? And there's always this thing which has been discussed to say, now maybe I will benefit from a value chain. But you're also asking somebody who is saying we're going to benefit from a value chain, especially when the discussion of oil come in. Because we have already started the fight of oil. We have already started fighting each other in terms of oil. And there's something which I really do not understand to say. Why do we started fighting? Who is going to be a commander if we did not even go to to the battlefield. We are already fighting among ourselves to say, in terms of oil, I'm going to have this one. This one is where I'm going to lead here. This is not what you're going to have. And you are reminding me of a story of a guy who was fighting with friends to say, when I buy a car, you are not going to be in my car. Even when people come and say, why you guys are fighting each other? No, this one said he's not going to do what, this one want to get into my car. Where is your car? He just thinks of the future. But the question is that the future should also be handled with care in terms of planning and also in terms of what need to be done. But before we go to the conversation of with Dwight, particularly when he attended the event yesterday, and also going to expand on that to say, regardless of the mining expansion, the mining sector expanding between 2023 and 2024 with 30%, it's only 2% of Namibians are employed in the mining sector. What does that mean? And also, what is the content of the conversation from, Philly Masuku, that is the director, the country director from of ILO, International Labour Organization, and what are some of the development there in terms of the mining sector? And interestingly, you may also want to equip yourself with just read the G20 Declaration of 2025, particularly point 31 to 34. When you look at harnessing critical minerals for inclusive and sustainable growth, then when you read that part, then you also understand to say, developing countries, they are positioning themselves, particularly when it's coming to award and using of critical minerals. But there is also a development of a framework, and that framework on critical minerals allow countries voluntarily to trade with each other at an equal rate. If I'm selling lithium to Canada, and you are, and Zambia is selling lithium to Canada, it must be on an equal rate and unnecessary competition, especially among the developing world, should be fully addressed. And also the aspect of local beneficiation. And it's really a point that our president has been focusing on, to say local beneficiation. Look at the areas where there is a mining sector. Yes, some mines, they invest in schools, corporate social responsibilities. But look at that town. Look at the people in that town. Look at the young people within the mining, towns. And you're asking yourself to say, are these not the same people that are standing on billions and billions of dollars? Are there any other local beneficiations? We are speaking about, we don't have enough or up to standard soccer stadium. We have a mine that established up to standard stadium that not only for locals, but can also allow even our brave radios to play in. Because that was supposed to be their responsibility to say, you mine, you benefit. You mine, there is local beneficiation. And you employ. But not only the discussion of value chain, because somebody can say we are benefiting from a value chain, but at what, how, and also how can we look into the future and also be different? Because having negative data is not negative when we are looking into the future. It's only negative now. But having 2%, we maybe come and sit and say, man, but I think more need to be done. ILO, maybe I need to look at what we have done, or produce an alternative statistic too, which is indicating that no, this is not exactly what we mean. There are also those who benefit from a value chain, because people need to be very clear on how they're going to be benefiting from the mining sector. And remember, the mining sector is not a forever industry. If you don't handle it with care, there is a time where the mine reach its end. The mine has a lifespan, and there are time where it reaches a point of, not be able to produce what you are getting from it. But that should be the discussion. So let's look at a short commercial break. Then from there, we'll continue with the conversation, especially when we'll be joined by Dwight Links.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM. The
Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile ko berewa bara hetatu natu bari o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any staff.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next week.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye. The eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. As I indicated, I'll be joined by my colleague Dwight Links, especially when we speak about the mining sector, especially in line with that discussion, a public dialogue on promotion, decent work in the mining sector between Namibian Parliament and Frederick Eber Stiftung, that is the German Foundation, especially looking at the labor issue. But let us here from my colleague Dwight. Good morning, and thank you for joining us at Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing, Chief?
No, I'm all good, David. Thank you for the invite, specifically about talking about some of the things that I observed at this public dialogue that happened yesterday.
Yeah, let us start with it. Before we go to the 2%, which is the main part of the discussion, what was your overview of, you know, the dialogue? Was it productive? And from the side of the workers and also the side of the legislation, where are they meeting and where are they not meeting, particularly regarding the mining sector?
Yes, David. So if we start off primarily taking a look in terms of, you know, how this dialogue was basically structured, it obviously invited the members of parliament from the standing committee. I just want to get the standing committee's name.
Yeah.
The standing committee on poverty eradication, labor and industrial relations.
Yeah.
It obviously also, invited the, representatives of, the mining sector and the executive director for Ministry of Justice and Labor Relations. Okay. He's one of the executive directors, that being Mr. Ben Ngombe.
Mm.
Who also did a presentation, and so did the standing committee as well. And then there was the presentation done by the International Labour Organization. Now, I just stopped there specifically because I came back to the office. So the other presentations, I didn't have a chance to observe them as well.
Yeah.
But, in terms of those that I observed and the particular conversations that I also observed after the presentations were primarily interesting specifically about the perspectives they took. Since this was a discussion, David, about decent work within the mining sector.
Yeah.
So decent work is a term that is a little bit different or difficult to define depending on the sector that you look at.
Yeah.
So, decent work could be something like the conditions that you work under,
mm-hmm.
or it could be about the wages or the salary that you earn, mm-hmm. or it could be, for example, you know, other particular things associated to the work that you're doing. So this could be things like housing or being offered housing if you are a full-time employee in the enterprise that you work at.
Yeah.
You know, these particular kinds of things. So the decent work, obviously, that was highlighted here was obviously things regarding the security of long-term employment, as well as also the greater involvement in the discussion of the mining sector. What would this greater involvement be? Some of the core concerns that I heard in between the Q&A sessions, in between the presentations was ensuring that it's predominantly Namibians that benefit most from the mining sector. But this mostly came from the unions itself. And, also speaking about the, 50% ownership that the former mines minister, Natangwa Etete, made reference to at last year's, mining expo.
Yeah.
Is also a little bit of a problematic thing to achieve because once again, a mine is not it's literally not, you know, it's not a simple enterprise to startups. So those were some of the particular core discussions that I observed in the short period that I was there, which was about 2.5 hours, to be honest.
Now, let us look at, what people want to hear, especially the statistics. Now, looking at, mining sector and employment, there have been a discussion where, although informal economy has been seen to say not contributing, but when it comes to employment, whether it's decent work, whether it's sustaining the person in that condition, it's stated to be at 58% and contributing even higher in terms of to the GDP. But what is the meaning of mining sector employing 2%? Is this the mines, all the mines in Namibia, or we also include small scale miners and or other companies related to that, or how do you get to that number? Because I'm also trying to understand it, especially to somebody who's listening.
Okay, so one of the presentations that I observed was a presentation by the International Labour Organization's country director for Namibia, Pilile Masuku.
Yeah.
And she started off with that statement firstly, because I know, primarily when I also wrote the social media caption for our social media was that, Ivan, our editor, asked Dwight, does this make sense what you just said?
Yeah.
That the mining sector only employs 2%, but it enjoyed a 30% growth rate between 2023 and 2024.
Mm.
And I said, yeah, these are the words that have been used. So I'm literally just, you know, quoting what the country director says.
Yeah.
And there is major fact in this, David, because for the past 2 years primarily, the mining sector has been sort of like the biggest growth or the sector that has enjoyed the most growth, which technically reflects in things like the trade statistics that the NSA helps supplies to us, and also the various particular sectoral performances that the NSA also releases, you know, every month in terms of highlighting to us, the broader country, about, you know, what are some of the driving forces in terms of economic activity in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And every sector, David, so far, it had been the mining sector being the biggest performer. It's not the agricultural sector.
Yeah.
It's not the housing and construction.
Yeah.
It's literally and obviously the tourism sector is not being counted in that sectoral observation.
Yeah.
So, many cases it is just designated to the mining sector.
Mm.
And this was obviously because of the heightened interest of exploration between 2023 and 2024, which also spilled over a little bit into 2025. But these have been the telltale signs. So if the mining sector is the only one having the biggest increase, and this is because of the oil and gas, has the biggest increase in exploration, sees the biggest activity happening in the Namibian economy, yes, they would then start hiring more people. They would have more vacancy adverts floating about they require these professionals for oil rig or working on oil rigs or training for certain kinds of Namibian professionals to be trained for oil rigs and oil exploration offshore. Then sure, you would then see this heightened interest. And it also included between 2023 and 2024, the activities of the what was the mine? I think it's the Rossing mine that also became that, you know, that was sold from its previous owners to Chinese ownership now.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, you also saw that activity now coming to the fore.
Yeah.
Then there was the big announcements in 2024 specifically about the Namibian and the Australian uranium mines being the latest uranium mines to take effect in the Rongo region. So that was deep water from the Australian outfit, and the other one was Bannerman, the Namibians.
Mm.
So that actually meant also that you saw heightened interest in that scenario also take place. So there is some facts, some telltale signs, which are also factual, that Masuku was also relying on, even though the statistics you quoted comes through from the labor force report of 2023, which highlights that amount of Namibians being employed.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this saying something about the skills that we have, or is also saying that, you know, in terms of mining, you still have a lot of technical expertise that are coming from outside? And maybe why we are there, because I was also concerned about the number, but when I check closely, I realize that this is a person who is based in Namibia, is a country director, and has all the information. Maybe is the aspect of value addition maybe come to play, to realize, to say we may be exporting quality, but we don't have employment that we have created for our people, even though we are just doing what you know, when Matasha indicated, say, from pit to pot.
Yeah. It becomes tricky because here's the thing, David. Some of the conversations regarding ensuring that employment opportunities are only concentrated to for Namibian interests. And this was a point that the union representatives that were present were trying to drive at every opportunity that we had the Q&A sessions.
Yeah.
Which is a good particular point they're trying to drive. However, we keep missing one specific major component of the discussion, being who owns the mine, and secondly, who's under whose particular ownership are these particular production decisions made?
Indeed.
Because David, just to sketch you an issue, I've heard specifically from other Namibians that supply services to mines across Namibia, complaining. Yeah, and this is literally a similar example I was made. They would say, yeah, for example, an engineer would be brought from Australia because the mining facility in Namibia is owned by an Australian company. So then they would transfer an Australian engineer from Australia to come and run some of the operations or work in a specific department of the mine. And then there is a Namibian with similar qualifications working next to that Australian. But the Australian is paid on the international pay scale, which is three times the salary rate than the local Namibian.
Yeah.
And the Namibian only gets the Namibian scale, which basically speaks to, you know, that there are varying degrees of contracts on offer in that scenario. But there's nothing Namibia can do because this is a discussion based upon who owns the mine, what kind of executive decisions are you making, and what outcomes do you want? Now, if you look at that scenario also of the ownership scale of things, and I'm now highlighting now some of the talking points that came through. The one gentleman from, I think it was the Mine Workers Union, highlighted that, foreigners are brought in.
Just hold on.
Okay.
If you lost your show, all of Tali Kutungupo.
Oma wa o tomono okuzako NHP. Genge wa longi fae longi foli lipedu lo wa wo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku nefiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oe. O wa washimali wa oshosha kupako. Washika we delwa komto alandu hako. Kashi, koma punglo e na shano unjolo welewe. Otodulu okulongi fa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko, opo una miti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oimali wa ishona. Oyo hodulu okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, omayakulo olu hapu, hakala ina kwa telwa, mouwa we kwa folo elo unamiti. Ile, otodulu no kuri, okupitifapo e mwe didonumba, tokala inofuta eakulolo elo unamiti. Kowyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fwana ododina okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Short on cash? Get to USave for these super savings. 1 liter long life Nam Milk full cream milk, just $19.99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram U brand cornflakes, just $39.99 Namibian dollars. 100 milliliter aqua fresh toothpaste, just $19.99 Namibian dollars. 2 kilograms of Rice King Parboiled rice, also $39.99 Namibian dollars. And pay only $109.99 Namibian dollars for a 10 kilogram bag of Top Score Super Maize Meal. Hurry to your favorite You Save and save now.
Yeah, Dwight, let's continue.
Yep. So yeah, where I left off was primarily if there was one other point that was made, literally parallel to the point I just highlighted, specifically that if, you know, depending on who owns the mining outfit or the particular mine, if it is foreign owned, they will bring in a lot of foreign talent into senior positions and so on. So one gentleman also from the mining sector or from the mining unions highlighted specifically that the problem is that rules are bended specifically by these foreign-owned mines in terms of bringing in foreign workers, which are usually at either on managerial level staff, and then they get trained regarding Namibian particular, you know, training at operational level scenarios at the mines in Namibia. But this is the particular discussion. Obviously, if we've got to look at the talking points that speak about this, that one's particular percentage about the mining sector, the 2% that we started off with, highlights that not everyone can work in the mining sector per se. And the bigger question, which was hanging there at the public dialogue, was, are we looking to the mining sector to answer all of Namibia's employment needs?
Because
there's a period of the 1980s where a lot of Namibians had the opportunity of working in the mining sector. They were treating it like, you know, literally like you would treat work, holiday work, like you can get an opportunity just like that.
Yeah.
Or are we looking into the particular needs that come through from the mines itself, being that these are highly skilled people, meaning you should only have engineering backgrounds and other technical skills in order for you to participate in this thing.
Yeah.
So these were some of the concerns highlighting there.
So the issue of did the issue of critical minerals come to play, and also ownership of Namibia mining industry moving forward, maybe renegotiating or maybe speaking about what has been stated, particularly looking at the AU governance report on natural resources, to say Africans must own their natural resources, particularly moving forward, especially if you want to look at beneficiation. Did that come to the discussion?
Not in the segment, David, that I was watching, and that this segment was between 10 a.m. And up to sort of like just before lunch, primarily just before the presentation that came through from the department of mining, which was talking about occupational health and safety measures within the mining sector. Now, there was another particular statistic that the ILO country director also mentioned, that the mining sector in Namibia has the highest occupational health and safety occurrences, meaning we're talking about work-based accidents because of the nature of the work that has to be conducted.
Yeah.
Supposedly, it is at an 8% level, which is also supposedly the highest in the country of all the other sectors.
Is it what level?
And it's at 8%.
Okay.
And it's the highest level across the sectors in the country in Namibia, which obviously means that in some scenarios, this means that the workspace, the areas, the conditions under which mine workers have to work, in some cases leads to certain very dangerous accidents that they undergo or experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look at this particular discussion, David, it's also a discussion of okay, this is a theme of decent work. Decent work also implies that you need a safe working environment, because it is a pretty broad umbrella theme to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at security in the workplace, you're looking at social protection, you're looking at fair income. So these are various dimensions that this thing takes.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at safe conditions to work under at the workplace, and you're also looking for longevity in terms of employment.
Mm.
However, the mining guys were only allowed to speak at the end, literally after lunch, David.
Okay.
I mean, I would have wanted to stay for the analytical perspective that would have come through from the Chamber of Mines Executive Vice President, Mr. Irvin Simata.
Yeah.
But that perspective was literally kept at the end. And here before lunch, all I was hearing was, you know, things have to change here, things have to change there, which made the whole discussion turn very political very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you sometimes also get to ask the question internally, okay, so what are some of the things that we need to know and understand what's going on in the mining sector? firstly, these have been the conversations that Helmut and I have been having on the home run. Like, we need transparency, heightened governance, and we need more accountability measures regarding the extractive industries. So that we understand, okay, we now know that 2% of the overall employed Namibians work in the sector. What was that 30% expansion rate? What does it actually look like?
It was expanded for who?
Only for the mining sector.
I'm asking who benefited from that expanded, expansion, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you have to look at what the 2% translates to, David. So the overall employed Namibians in the mining sector is 14,337 in 2023 when the labor force survey was extrapolated from the census survey, from the census survey. So 14,000 and you literally add 30% onto this. That's a drop in the water, literally, in terms of that expansion. Because when you're trying to understand, okay, so the 30% expansion looked massive, and remember the examples I highlighted at the start of the discussion, it was primarily only in the mining sector. So think about that mining sector only enjoying that 30%. So we're literally talking about it bumping up from 14,337 probably to just 15,000 on the dot.
So
700 extra, maybe 700 extra Namibians, or slightly more, you know, because 30% would be slightly more in that 14,000.
Yeah.
But this means it didn't make a great impact in terms of over the past 3 years of employment opportunities.
Yes, Dwight, just your last point, because I wanted to speak about oil and gas, because looking at the mining sector, oil and gas is also part of the mining extraction. But what is your final 2 points? Are we seeing fruitfulness, the value of the discussion, or maybe what we can learn from discussion of this particular nature?
Well, with the oil and gas, David, primarily what we possibly have to look forward to has been what some of the, I'll call it, lawmakers and even I don't want to say politicians, but some of the big, you know, the big executives. Okay, you can't call a minister an executive, but
a technocrat,
you know,
what?
But let's say rather the leadership in the Namibian government has started announcing back in January that we have to look forward to final investment decisions that have to take place between now and next year, 2027.
Yeah.
But the downside is, David, the overall time frame cannot be rushed from a political perspective to achieve certain particular industrial goals by 2030.
I hear you. And,
because the time frame that is outlined in the Deloitte baseline survey says literally the conservative, meaning the slowest you can go, or the fastest you can go, sort of like the average speed, would be that we will see the first barrel being pumped in 2034.
That is the fastest you can go.
That's the fastest you can go. So that's the average speed. The slowest you can go is probably that the first barrel will come out after 2035. The following year after that.
Yeah.
So for some reason, it seems like if we have to look at the oil and gas, there's a lot of hope being placed on oil and gas to start performing between now, February 2026, and 2027. And it's as if we are trying to rush the discussion to prove there is oil, jobs will be created. But jobs for who?
No, it's a very good, it's a very good observation. And, I think that thing that we need to expand that more. So Dwight, thank you very much for your contribution and thank you for your input.
Not a problem, David.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. I was in conversation with my colleague Dwight Links and speaking about the mining sector. And you can engage us at 083-288-401, 083-288-401 for those of you who are coming on the radio for the first time. This is Early Morning Scoop. with me, David Shombe. And interestingly, it's natural resources to push a particular political victory. Let us learn from the best. If we really want to enjoy oil and gas, let us admit that it was going to take time. And if we are putting all our resources there, it's a good gamble that we are going to receive those results maybe in 10 years to come. Maybe in 15 years to come, which is good. But confining a long-term national strategic plan within a political term, that is not going to work. And ask yourself this question. Why do you think we have a lot of white elephant projects? Because we confine them within a time frame, because industrialization is not a political term, and building from one to another. Even if you are given a ministry to run, don't only think about your term, think about also when you are not there. Because that is a temporary position that somebody also going to come. But if you have a 20-year plan to say, okay, it's oil and gas, the investment is 12 billion, there's more money to come. We are topping the list of greenfield investment, and there's potential. I cannot say, engineer, I want that oil by December. Bring that oil now, because my people need employment. That is not going to work. But being patient about the industry, and also understand that we have also immediate critical things that we need to deal with, that will assist us and will reveal us from a lot of stress. Because even the discussion that we're seeing now, everybody is saying, no, we are going to oil and gas, we are going to oil and gas, and we want to see the result, we want to see the first oil. Maybe it come earlier, maybe it will also come later. But the question, do we have, at this current situation, do we still have time to wait? Do we have time to build a foundation? And just think about it this way. What if oil just come out in 2035 or 2036 or 2037, which there is a possibility? But that does not mean that we are not building toward it, because there are still businesses being operated now that will help into facilitating that. But that does not mean that actual benefit will come soon. And it's the same with nuclear, to say, why can't we start with nuclear now? Then maybe we can benefit by 2040. But maybe the discussion will change, because it's an aspect of what needs to be done immediately. You know, 500,000 jobs by 2030 is not something to be confined into. We may try our best, then we don't reach 500,000 jobs, which is fine. But have we done something that can really say that we have changed? That is a discussion. And with the mining sector, it's a critical discussion. And for your own information, get time and listen to the mining in Damba in South Africa. Look at that discussion. And I'm always indicating to you, somebody who is retired can give you more wisdom and has more perspective. And if I want to understand mining, I always listen to Gwen Matashi. Gwen Matashi is an experienced South African politician who is going on retirement, actually, and serve all the governments within all the government in South Africa post-1994. But he understands this thing very well. And I know he has content and context when he's coming to the mining. And he's very clear. And he's a guy who told Donald Trump to say, no, you stop business, we are not giving you our minerals. And you know, like a child with a ball to say, no, you don't give me that, I'm not going to give you. He said, no, they don't do that, we are not giving them our minerals. But the interesting position that he took, especially at the mining in Damba, is the aspect of the critical minerals. And what do we mean when we speak about critical minerals? And what do we mean when we speak about... And it's also the same in the context of Namibia, to say, when you speak about Namibians benefiting from the mining sector, are we benefiting because of pity? because we are Namibians previously disadvantaged or because we are able? Because that discussion should be very clear also to say, am I benefiting because I'm just a Namibian with a business in the mining sector? Or because I'm Namibian with a business in the mining sector and I'm able? Or because I have skills too? Because there's a program of BREG Economic Empowerment in South Africa that really gave a lot of black business people power. But it has also destroyed the industry. Because the aim was to industrialize, give you an opportunity to previously disadvantage, and give opportunity to others also. But it has also caused a little bit of challenges as we are speaking now. But mining is critical and important, and we should not be apologetic of all Namibians getting into mining sector or getting into oil and gas. But it's a discussion which need to be expanded beyond, you know, the surface. Yes?
Hey, Mr. Shombe.
Yes, Chief.
I think it appears that we might not have made our point so clear on the issue of diversification of economic activity. Where we can see that, yes, in this area, we need to energize or enhance our energy.
When you say we need to, when are we going to?
Yes, but we were told from the report of the informal economy, informality and things like that.
I'm just asking a question to say, okay, maybe it's also the high time that now, the question of we need to, what are we going to do?
We must persuade now the, for example, those mining companies.
When?
And persuade them and tell them the fact that, yes, even though you are doing a great job, we appreciate you, but this 2%, does it really translate into tangible results, outcome, in terms of poverty alleviation or in the area of, because every sector, whether your education or UNAM or wherever, or the law firm that you people are establishing. So they put a stake in there.
Yeah.
So can't they now convince, it's so difficult to convince and tell them that these are the statistics. Even though the statistics need to be explained to the people and say, yes, this is what you are tapping out, this is what you are bringing in, you are contributing to poverty.
I want to ask you a question. Is it the responsibility of a mining business firm to create employment for the Namibian people?
Whose responsibility is it?
No, I'm just asking because I'm asking because the first point when they come into business is to make money. And people don't understand. Yeah. The first thing the investor come, they want to make money. The mining firm, they want to make money. Let me ask you, if it requires 5 engineers to produce 20 billion, they will use 5 engineers to produce 20 billion. But it's not, and maybe we should also draw that line too, to say, that should be the responsibility of our government also to stand up for us to say, okay, how much is owned here, and also how much expertise do we have?
I think that it's so difficult to renegotiate, or it's so difficult, or which responsibility are you now trying to point finger to?
Okay.
We cannot point the finger to ourselves. If we know that, yes, like Dwight was saying in yourself,
yeah,
and we think the same things in the morning. So if you know that, yes, this percentage, that the most of these things are subsidized by the government, or if this one doesn't mean maybe it should be the law needs to be amended.
Okay. Sure. If you have 3% in my business, do you really have power to negotiate?
Yes. When we get
I'm just asking. It's not a bad thing.
The constitution has given you the power to negotiate even better, to negotiate better deals.
Yeah.
The beneficiation that is there, and you have got the statistics you now interrogate the statistic, 2%. This 2%, what is it, where is it going? Does it mean that we cannot get 50% from that money? Complementarity that was paid by Botswana people.
Okay,
so
okay.
That's not a difficult thing to integrate.
Yeah, let me ask you, ne? Just for an example, I come into your house, then I own 93% of your house. Then I say I'm giving you this corner, not even in the kitchen, at the backyard. This corner is where you are going to rent from your own house.
Yeah,
I own almost 100%. Then you cannot say no. Wait. You cannot say no, David. I did not eat I did not eat 3 times a day. I'm the one who is in charge, and we must understand this, and also to say,
the person who is pushing me out of the house.
You are not pushed because we are not able to afford. I'm the one who has the money, and I'm the one who also have the resources.
Why do you acquire that power to have the money?
Yeah.
You are giving the equal rights.
Yeah.
So what is preventing you to acquire that power and create wealth from out of that?
It's a good question now to say, because you own the land. Maybe you have other houses, to say, what lesson now are you learning? Wait. What lesson now are you learning from this situation to say, in the next person who is going to buy my other house, I'm going to do it differently? Maybe what lesson are we learning? That is the question.
If you have learned, my friend, that is the most important sector of production. It is you, the entrepreneurs and the owner of that land, to make sure that, yes, the labor is coming here to invest wherever. So if you have the land, like we have it in the north, in everywhere, so whom are you going to bring? Can't you invest in that land? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Yeah, we are moving forward, and we have around, we have good minutes before we give to the big mic to unpack the day. And the critical question that we need to ask, and we must be very clear to say, and we have seen it, that people, they mean business. Do we mean business too as Namibians? When our friend from Japan come to Namibia, they mean business. When our friend from China come to Namibia, they mean business. And they are doing very well for their country. The question is that, are we doing well for our country? I was watching online, I think it's a foreign relation committee of, I think at that time of nominating ambassadors to countries. And there's our current ambassador from, the US ambassador to Namibia, speaking so well. And I'm asking myself, what a very good diplomat for his country. Understand the business to say, in Namibia, we have an advantage here and there. But we also understand our strategy that we are going to win here in terms of business. But the Chinese, they have been there before us. They have advantage here. But this is their problem. Then you're asking yourself a question. When they are doing business for, when they are pushing their own interests, which is normal in an international arena, do we understand that, and are we also doing something for our country? Put it this way. Imagine the resources that we have now were in a country like the US, or were in a country like the Russia, or were in Singapore. Would it be different? Would it be different? Because the question that we should also ask ourselves is that, do we understand? Have we learned from the past? And, are you going to do something different? Or we are still going to fight each other? And one more point. Looking at the particular oil and gas amendment bill, I just hope everybody read and understand how it's going. And also conduct an analysis to say, who is going to benefit? How is going to benefit the Namibians? Maybe it's a very good policy. Maybe it's also not good. Maybe it needs to be advanced. But rejecting something that you don't understand, I think is something which is
which is really need to be looked at to say, do we all understand before we start the argument? Did we read details of that? Did we read the implications? Did we also understand the whole strategy of how we're going to deal with that industry? Have we learned from the best? And do we also have patience to see our resources growing? Because it's not only the oil and the gas or petroleum amendment bill. There is a lot of resources which are being discovered every day in Namibia. And looking at underground rare earth minerals, critical minerals, which is including coal, as it has been stated by Matashi. Do we have a roadmap? Because what need to be done is learning and moving forward and understand that things are not coming tomorrow. But it's a discussion which need to be expanded. It's things that we need to learn every day. And also relooking at things. And most importantly is cooperation. Because the things that we see in Namibia, we may speak well about our country, but we are not cooperating. We are competing even at a very smaller scale. We are competing even at a very smaller scale where we're supposed to collaborate. And you're asking yourself, how are we going to win? If okay, now exploration, we have some Namibian mines who own 50% in exploration. But when this, and the aim is when they're exploring is for them to grow, that one day they will own that exploration sector. But if you have Namibians who own explorations within that exploration license, they are contracting for 15% and they started growing. Do you think Namibia standing companies in the mining sector can really work together? To say, okay, you own 15, you have been in this for 5 years, now you are 10 years. Why can't we be standing and own that sector to say now exploration is just Namibians? Maybe we can have 20% from a friend from China, Canada or somewhere. But the problem that we have in Namibia, we do not like each other. And we must admit so that we can like each other. Because if we are saying we like each other while we don't, then it's a problem. But if we understand that we don't like each other, or we have a problem of cooperating with one another, understanding that problem can be the first step toward, cooperation. Because the mining is big, the oil and gas is big. The same with the fishing sector, the same with other critical industries. But if we are awake, if we are collaborating, there's no way we are going to lose. But yeah, leaving you in the good hands of the Big Mike to unpack the day. From me, David Shombe, bye-bye. See you around, and take care of yourself. Sharp, sharp.